world of increasingly engaged and informed consumers, sustainability is the buzzword business owners across any industry you can name are trying to connect themselves to. From a hotel experience to a great meal out to the luggage we carry and the clothes we wear, we are demanding action and impact in more than just words. And of course, entrepreneurs have taken up that charge and are leading the way in changing the way things are made, in mind of environmental impact, and the way business is done. In recent years, the fashion industry has been under the microscope in particular, something which has not only brought about a huge shift in the landscape, but created many new business opportunities. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For this week's program, I sat down with Flora Davidson and Gus Bartholomew, the co-founders of Supply Compass. The platform was launched back in 2015 with the aim of creating a trusted and transparent supply chain. From sourcing materials to manufacturing and delivery, the platform helps businesses and designers to know exactly who they are dealing with and what they are buying. And it allows them to show off their sustainable and responsible production credibility as well. Gus and Flora have focused their business on India to start. They each lived in Mumbai for 2 years and have personally visited more than 200 factories, handpicking each and every factory they work with. They also have offices in London and Mumbai, and since the company's launch less than 3 years ago, more than 1 million products have been made, from textiles to homewares and furniture. Here now is their story.
For us, Supply Compass is basically a new age sourcing platform to help brands and manufacturers internationally work better together. And so that basically works through the idea of helping people to design more efficiently, discover each other, and then deliver product.
Flora, I know you have extensive experience in India, but walk us through where you were at, I think, back in 2015, where this became an idea. What was the market then, and what was sort of the problem you set out to solve?
So back in 2015, I was actually working as an innovation consultant for fashion and sportswear brands. And whilst I was doing that, we were doing a lot of market research around the rise of sustainability as a trend. And I got really interested in it at that point and felt that it was much more than just a trend and actually a whole movement. So from that, I actually left and set up my own brand. And in order to do that, I knew that I had to go and find my supply chain myself. So I left my job, moved to India and did a textiles course in Mumbai and really absorbed as much as I could do about textiles and how things are made, really on the ground in India. And then there was really a turning point after about a month of being there where I went to visit a mill with the textiles course. And the conditions, it was super hot. It smelled really bad. The chemicals were everywhere. No one was wearing shoes, no gloves. And I thought, there's something bigger than me just doing my brand here. I think I can have more impact if actually I help lots of people understand really what's going on in India and how to work better.
If I can just step back for a second, I'm just curious about the mission in going to India in the first place. Was that to say, I can do this, I can show maybe how it's done in a sustainable or more ethical or just in a better way?
The reason why we went to India was to learn firsthand, was to research, was to question, because we didn't have manufacturing backgrounds. So really what was key was to observe. And so, you know, you can have these assumptions of what things are like and you can read all you want from your desk in London. But when you're traveling around, visiting factories, mills, tanneries, and asking these questions yourself, it's a totally different experience. And I think that the factories themselves were really surprised to meet people like us. They were like, you're not a buyer, you're not a brand, you're not an inspection person. Who are you? Okay, we feel quite comfortable talking to you guys. So we would spend a few days at a time. We would often even stay with the families of the factory owners and we would just ask them lots and lots and lots of questions. Why is it done in this way? How has it got to this point that this is what people are paying? What happens? Why are you cutting corners when you do this? So it was just lots and lots of being the outsider really, I think, helped us get a much bigger picture, and we made no assumptions before.
So, Gus, you were involved at this time as well?
Yeah, so this kind of coincides. So how the business originally started is that I'd seen firsthand people I know start businesses and really struggle with the whole process of finding the right manufacturers and then working with them. And that basically came down to no one really knew, especially for the kind of SME market, how and where their product was getting made. And that coincided with Flora also setting up our business. We had heard the same things time and time again from brands that we're really struggling to do this. And so for us, the kind of natural thing, the first port of call was to say, okay, well, let's kind of go and do this for Flora's brand and understand it firsthand with someone who's actually going through the process and build the business around that. And so by going and speaking to all the factories and actually understanding it from their point of view, understanding their problems, we were able to build a solution that works for all parties in the supply chain. And that's really where we feel there's the biggest impact.
So take me from where this is a brand idea with Flora to an actual company where you are problem solvers and doing things for other people. Where does that come in this conversation?
So that was what I was focusing mm-hmm. on while Flora was focusing on the brand. And then sort of shortly after Flora had been doing the brand, joined Supply Compass. And then we kind of took it from there together.
So what did the platform look like originally? And who were you speaking to? Because obviously this isn't you're not speaking to consumers, but you're on the other end of this. So mm-hmm. So what does the platform look like originally? And how do you get that off the ground?
So when we first started out, we were doing it manually, mm-hmm. Much more like a kind of traditional sourcing agent. We had a number of brands that we started working with in the UK, and we said, right, we're going to go out and find the factories for these guys and kind of merge that. And then we took the learnings from those first few brands, including Flora's brand, and then said, right, now we're in a position where we can actually build technology to improve this whole process and make it more effective.
Is it fair, or Flora, perhaps this is an oversimplification, but is this saying to people you're doing the due diligence for them on the ground, in a sense, showing them what the reality is in the factories, but also seeing where you can maybe direct or affect a little bit of change? Is that right?
Yeah. And I think the key thing really is that to make change happen first, you've got to understand and you've got to really know what's going on. So transparency about where everything is coming from is the first step. So knowing where not just the factories were, but also every single kind of part that's being fed into that, where are the buttons coming from? Where is the fabric coming from? So as a first stage, we're saying to brands, we know where everything in your product is coming from. In order to make change happen, a real fundamental change inside the factories, we need the power of many, many more brands feeding into our network. So at the moment, we work closely with about 50 manufacturers, and we will have kind of 4 or 5 brands working with one factory. When we can take over 50% of the capacity of that factory is really when we can start to say, this is what we want you guys to do. And we can have that conversation together. The brands working with that factory through us can collaborate, can share fabrics, can really together say, yes, we want to lift up the standards. Yes, we want to. But it's got to come with the factories and with the brands and with us all together collaborating on that point.
And how much, you've already touched on it, Flora, but Gus, how much did this being on people's minds these days play into that? Because obviously we want more transparency. We're demanding that from brands. So the companies and brands are saying, okay, we need to change things. So I'm sure the timing worked out at the same time when you were launching this. Is that mm-hmm. fair?
Yeah, it definitely kind of came together at the same time. And that was a big kind of driver for us. And I guess the way that we approach this is that we saw that sustainability was something that everyone was driving towards, but how do they actually achieve that in a economical way? If you kind of step back 10 years and look at what sort of sustainable and ethical meant then, it's very, very different to kind of the modern definition of it. And so the way that we really approach this is we believe that we want to make sustainability make business sense and make it feasible for all companies to do. And the way that we want to do that is by making sustainability, well, producing sustainably the easiest way compared to any other. And we believe that by embedding efficient technology in our process, we're able to enable brands to do that.
Talk to me a little bit about what companies, brands were asking for in and around that time and what they want to change and what you were able to originally sort of direct them towards.
What's really interesting from all the brands, I mean, we did a lot of research, market research with brands, with a kind of whole SME market. A lot of brands don't actually know what they're looking for. They say, we want 100% sustainability. And we have to sit down with them at the beginning of working with them and say, what does sustainability mean to you as a brand? Because it means different things to everyone. Ultimately, if everyone can be 100% sustainable, that's amazing, but we're not there yet. So it's about taking each brand on their own individual journey and unpicking what's at the beginning, the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest things for them to change, but also to set them up. So our process is really setting them up with the right partnerships to make more sustainably and really improve their impact. You set up the right relationships, you then get them, everyone in that team, on board with the idea, because that's the key thing, getting buy-in from every single person in their company. And then you start looking at materials. Materials is really our starting point. And then we kind of progress in the future towards designing for sustainability. So really looking at ways to reduce waste on the production floor by cutting your patterns in a certain way to fit the fabric and things like that. So it's a journey. But what people really want is simplicity. What's the easiest way for me to do this? Because every brand is so time strapped and cash poor. So they want something that they can do quickly and easily. And if we can't be that, then they won't do it.
Gus, walk me through exactly how it might work if I was, say, wanting to make jackets or something with you. And I wanted to walk through that entire process and learn about these suppliers and sign up and walk me through how that actually might work.
So generally, in terms of the brands that we're working with, they're already like established brands. They've been going for a number of seasons. What we're finding at the moment is about 70% of the brands that come to us are coming from a point of not producing sustainably at the moment and wanting to make that change. And they're saying, right, how do we actually do this? So what they can do on our platform is they will sign up, they'll submit a short initial request. Off the back of that, that basically draws out enough information for us to match them with a factory that we've already visited, vetted, filmed inside via the platform. They can then take a look at that. They will then get initial quotes back on their designs. They'll then use our development process, a sort of tech pack creator, to actually then fully spec out that product. And then from there, they'll use our platform to manage the whole sampling process. So that really is one of the most inefficient processes at the moment in the whole design to delivery, because there's so much back and forth of samples. There's a lot of interpretation, approvals, sourcing that has to happen. And so at the moment, that's one of the things that we're kind of really focusing on, is how do we stop so much back and forth? How do we make sure that people have a really clear understanding of exactly what is required so that they can actually go through to production quicker? You know, if you look at traditionally how long people will take to go from sort of initial concept through to actually delivery of a product, can often be sort of 8 to 12 months. And we're really kind of shortening that down so that that whole initial design process is much, much quicker.
What is the hardest thing to source in this country? Because I imagine a lot of people will say, okay, well, we want to make things close to home because that's the way it used to be. And that would be the most sustainable thing. But there's things that can be made very well and very efficiently and do help other economies, say in India. But I think there are specific items that are very hard to find. So are you helping on that front? Are there things? I know buttons and zips is a big issue for a lot of people.
So I think that's a really interesting point around sort of location of manufacturing. What kind of is deemed to be the most sustainable? For us, the way that we look at it is, you know, over 75% of men's clothes contain cotton. India is the largest producer of cotton in the world. And so for us, it makes much more sense to produce as close as you can to the raw material, so that then, like, one of the biggest polluters, obviously, transport. So if you can reduce the amount of product that you're actually having to transport to the end location, then that's actually the most effective way of doing it. I also think, you know, we look at this on a global scale, and the two biggest producers of cotton are India and China. Those two countries together hold nearly a third of the world's population. So actually, if you're looking in terms of global sustainability, those really are the two locations that we should be looking to produce in.
I guess a lot of people might say the most sustainable thing would just be to either recycle or reuse things or just not purchase things at all. But of course, we need affordable clothing. We need things. So I think there's a big piece in here about changing consumer habits. But there's also a lot of work to be done still with brands. And it seems like there's an education piece on both sides that's happening. Do you find that?
Definitely. And I think when I was writing our sustainability kind of positioning, the educator was really a key part of who we are. We are enabling sustainability, but as a part of that, we've got to educate. We're educating manufacturers because they say to us, what's actually going on in the UK? What do brands actually want? We've heard this word sustainable, but is it actually happening? So we're trying to educate them of the kind of changing needs of brands. And also that goes back to a supplier level. A mill in the middle of nowhere in India doesn't actually know what's going on. If they understand to an extent, then it will be easier for them. But on a brand side, this is a really key part of really where we see us going towards is storytelling. If we can engage the brand in what's going on in the supply chain in a way that really inspires them rather than, you know, if it's just stats and data, or we can give that as well because then they can create marketing campaigns around that information and that can educate them. But if we can inspire them with stories about the human involvement in the supply chain, then they will understand like a key part of really what we often do throughout the production process is really explain what's going on, because even experienced production managers won't know necessarily what's going on at a certain level in the supply chain. So bringing that kind of education and storytelling into the supply chain is key to us in the future.
Mm. And is it India? Is it only India you're working with right now?
No, we work a lot in Portugal. And the reason why we work in Portugal is for their expertise in technical garments. So we do swimwear, sportswear, socks, terracotta there. Terracotta is a slightly separate material, but there because we're the proximity. So we work with a company called Recova in Spain who work with recycled yarns. And so we wanted to be close to the source of the yarns for that. They make some recycled polyester socks for us. So it's really thinking about the best locations for that product. So we have some factories in Cambodia, Nepal, Portugal, Spain, Italy and India and Sri Lanka. And we will be a global business. We intend to have factories anywhere that there is manufacturing strengths and then brands wherever they need.
Say for a European brand or a British brand, a lot of people, their first thought might be, okay, well, we need to pull production from Southeast Asia or somewhere like this and bring it closer to home. But as I think you already touched on, that's not always the solution because there are specific places that are very good at making things. And it goes, I think, even beyond the supply or the delivery footprint, but there's a little bit more there as well, right?
Definitely. I think it's about analysing it per product and saying where's the best place for this specific product, and also then taking into account like the wider business position. If you're a really large business, you want to ensure that you've actually rationalized your supply chain. You don't want to be sourcing from 150 different countries. So there's obviously going to be some form of sort of compromise that you want to make. But we picked India to start with because of the great variety and quality of product that you're able to get there. And it has always historically been a manufacturing hub and will continue to be. And therefore, we see it as a really strong place for people to choose to manufacture goods.
And I think Flora already touched on this as well, but do you find that you are often explaining that there are good factories that do things right, that are taking care of people, taking care of employees?
Inevitably, there are a lot of misconceptions about each country. And I think that for me, it's, you know, it's a country of 1.2 billion people. Yes, there's going to be good practice. And inevitably, yes, there will be bad practice as well. We make sure to spend a huge amount of time on the ground. I mean, even in our first 2 years there, we visited over 200 factories and picked only the absolute best that we found to work with. That's what we will continue to do, always pick the best and then help promote their work. And by doing that and providing the people who have the right ethic, the right values, and giving them more work, you will then lift the whole standard. But often say this, I mean, I've visited lots of factories in the UK as well, and all of the partners that we have in India, for me personally, if I was a garment worker, I would much rather be working in the facilities that we work with in India than some of the ones I've seen in the UK.
That is absolutely fascinating. Are there plans at all to work with factories in the UK? I mean, I think it's a big push to sort of revitalize tired or failed industries. I mean, things used to be made in this country, everything, right? Is that part of your outlook?
Yeah, we really wouldn't rule out any country to work in. And I think with the UK, it's about working out what's best to make in the UK for us as a business. At the moment, the products we're making, it just doesn't make business sense because the prices are too high, so the brands can't sell at that price. It works really well for luxury brands, but we only go up to affordable luxury as a price point. I would really like to work more with the UK for rapid prototyping when we look at kind of more like 3D printing side of things. I think where it can be really exciting is the technology. It kind of actually UK having us working with UK for different reasons perhaps than we did in the past. Because speed will always be important and nothing is faster than making in your own country. So as soon as there's technologies that can enable us to, you know, print a jumper here, we'll be interested in that.
And technology is a big part of what you guys do. For either of you, how exciting is it right now? Say, I think you mentioned Portugal where, and in Spain, where a lot of amazing things are being done with recycled plastics, I think, and technical wear. That's something you worked on a lot. So is it exciting right now? Is there a lot going on?
I think it's a really exciting time. And I think, you know, we get lots of people reading headlines and thinking, oh, we've got so much to do. It's, you know, sustainability is such hard work. But I think it's also important to focus on the positives, particularly in the last year. The conversation, it's gone beyond just conversation to really, there's a lot of exciting new businesses coming out of off the back of the kind of move towards sustainability. I'm really excited by the recycled space, looking at, so we work a lot with RPET. When people say recycled polyester, it's normally rPET. So we're really interested to see how we can bring garments back into our supply chain. So even though we focus on the kind of design and production side of things, how do we join the loop? How do we get the brand's products that we're making? How do we bring them back into the supply chain? So there's some really interesting kind of materials out there. What are some of those fun ones that we've seen?
I think what we've massively noticed from working with our suppliers is that they're able to do incredible things if they're given the demand. And so in some ways, the kind of technology is already there. They just need customers. And that then comes to the education point. So we work with an absolutely amazing supplier in India who produces paper out of recycled cotton. So takes all of the dead waste from factory floors, shreds it, pulps it, and then reproduce it into this incredible paper that is then used for all the swing tags, all the packaging. And that didn't really exist a few years ago. But the technology is simple. It's actually, he's using machinery that he's had for 15 years, but it's only now that people have said, oh, well, we can actually do something different here, that he's then seen that kind of taken up. And so we really feel that a key part of our role is to help educate brands and show them and showcase all of this incredible stuff that can be done, because the manufacturers are gagging to do it.
Yeah.
They're so excited about producing better because, frankly, they're often the ones that see the negative impacts of it firsthand. And so they are the real kind of driving force behind the action that can be taken.
And you said before that a lot of this has to do with technology, but it's not necessarily sink or swim for the factories that don't have the latest technology per se, because you would think that, you know, those are the ones that would be getting the most demand, but not necessarily. As you say, it's just maybe a rethink of how things are done.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the way that we see the technology really helping is that if you kind of split it into kind of the social side of things, the material side of things, and then the kind of process side of things, and you will always want to ensure that you pay the workers that work in the factory as high a salary as possible. Materials will always cost a certain amount as well, especially if you want to produce higher quality product and stuff that's going to last longer. And therefore, you basically leave the process, which is actually where you can find the efficiencies. And that's how you can make sustainability affordable. Because the other two, you really don't want to move. And so how do you make sustainability affordable? You make it more efficient for the whole process from design through to delivery. And that's really where the technology comes in.
Walk me through some of the numbers, if you can. How many factories, how many suppliers? Well, how many are on the platform and how many you're connected to today?
So we're working with about 50 factories at the moment. And for us, that is able to produce a huge volume of product. I mean, each one of our factories, their average output is about 80,000 units a month. So times up by 15, you can account for a hell of a lot of brands. We're working with about 50 brands at the moment, generally in the UK, but also we've got some clients in Australia, America, mainland Europe. We expect to kind of see that continue to grow in the coming years.
Flora, what's on your agenda these days? What are you most focused on these days in the company?
So I look after more working closely with brands. So Gus focuses on our manufacturing side of things, and I work closely. Really, it's behavioural change on the brand side and how to get buy-in, because it's a long journey that everyone is on here. It's not a quick fix. It's not going to happen overnight. So it's that really, and working out that stage process and what's really most important for us to do first. We've got these great relationships. So for me now, it's really about the early stages of the design development process. 80% of the impact that you can have on how sustainable a product is happens in that early stages when you're designing a product. So for me, it's all in the design.
I wonder on the brand side where inspiration is coming from these days. It's not only consumer demand, but I know big brands are often pressed to change. But I often wonder if it's the people in the middle, sort of the smaller to medium brands that are the ones that are really driving change. Is that something you're seeing today?
Yeah, we made a very conscious decision when we set up the business to focus exclusively on SMEs at the start, because we feel that actually the SME body of business is really growing in influence because of the likes of Instagram and the fact you can set up a brand overnight. So we feel that this kind of segment, the business owners may have only set up in the last 5 to 10 years. They're digitally savvy. There's this hunger to do things differently. We're really going after the early adopters in this category. Because they're the ones who will lead the change and inspire the others. But we feel that actually, if you change businesses in their first five, if you can have set them up in the right way in those first 5 to 10 years, then imagine in 10, 15 years when they're the equivalents of your H&Ms of the world, and it's in their core DNA. That is where the huge impact is actually if you get people at the start.
That's really interesting. And it seems that is a big part of brands today, as if you start sort of at the beginning and the start of your story rather than trying to have this big institutional change where that can be quite difficult once you become big, as you mentioned. But just lastly, perhaps from both of you, I'd just like to hear about the journey so far and the challenges in that and how you've enjoyed it.
I mean, yeah, it's been super exciting. I think it's been a massive education for us, both on the brand and the manufacturer's side. And helping those two parties to kind of collaborate more effectively has definitely been the biggest challenge. It comes back down to that kind of behavioural change and how do you get people to collaborate better. I think definitely with brands and manufacturers, it's often been a kind of much more traditionally contractual relationship. And so helping those people to come together and actually understand how each other works, the kind of limitations and constraints that they're each under, and actually sharing those and realizing that there are common solutions to both parties' issues.
Very well said. And Flora, just last word to you. Have you enjoyed this so far?
I mean, I have loved every minute of it. I never kind of saw myself moving out to India and doing everything that we did there. And that has really changed how, you know, what I want out of life. I think it would be impossible to build a business like this had we not had that experience or our ongoing experience out there, because we're learning from everyone every day. There's experts, you know, our manufacturers are experts in what they do. So it's been a pretty stimulating ride. It's pretty fast moving, but you know, it's really exciting that what's coming together here is what brands want, and policy is starting to wake up a little bit to change happening. And I think we're in this positive perfect storm point right now where I think the next few years are going to move fast for sustainability. I'm excited for it.
That's all the time we have on today's show. Thank you very much to Flora Davidson and Gus Bartholomew for coming in to share the story of Supply Compass. Thanks as well to our researcher, Rory Gooderick, and our studio manager, Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.